All right, Tabo say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is daf pei. We are picking up on Ayin Tes, some of the days by the Mishnah. I want to take the opportunity to thank Maishi for giving the shir on Shabbos, to thank Yehuda for giving the shir yesterday. And let's begin. Mishi yatzo hu ve'ishu l'medina sayon. A person went overseas. A person was living in a particular town, and he was married, and he went with his wife overseas l'medina sayon. Ubahu ve'ishta ubanav. And then he and his wife and his sons come back. Va'amar isha shi'asunars. He goes overseas. He comes back from overseas with his wife, with his children. Va'amar, and he says, isha shi'atsas imi l'medina sayam harehuzu. Harehuzu. So he says, this woman who's back here with me now, she's the same woman that I left with when I went overseas. Ve'ilu baneha. And these are her sons. So the Mishnah paskins, in tzarech lahavi raya lo ala isha v'lo ala banim. So one does not need to go ahead and bring any kind of proof as to the genealogical fitness of this particular woman or of her children. Now we'll discuss again. We'll discuss ultimately in the Gemara why not on the children. So the Mishnah says over here, "Ein tzarech lahavi raya lo ala isha shimiyuchases shekvar batkuha kishenasa." Because remember, the case over here is where lemaisa again that they checked her before they went ahead and they got married. So meaning the case over here is where she was already determined to be a miyuchases. So now, meaning she's considered to be genealogically fit. So now when she comes back, we know she's the same woman, and we assume the children with her are her children. Therefore, no one needs any additional investigation. Mesa. So however, let's say man goes overseas with his wife, and he comes back alone, and he says she died overseas, ve'ilu banehel, and these are her children. So the halacha is maybe raya ala banu, ve'ino maybe raya ala isha. So the husband needs to prove the genealogical fitness of the children, but he doesn't have to bring any proof as to the genealogical fitness of the woman. Isha nasasi b'mdina sayam. The man says, man left, let's say left his town single, and he says, I married overseas. And he comes back with a woman and children, and he says, this is the woman I married overseas, these are her children. In this case, maybe raya ala isha, raya ala banim. So he has to bring a proof as to the genealogical fitness of the woman, but he doesn't have to bring a proof as to the genealogical fitness of the children. In other words, once you prove the genealogical fitness of the woman, by definition, you prove the genealogical fitness of the children as well. Mesa ve'ilu banehel. But if a man says, I married overseas, the wife I married overseas died, so she's obviously not back here with me, but the children are here with me. So the halach is, in that case, the man has to bring a proof as to the genealogical fitness of the woman, as well as of the children. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabba Barafuna, V'kulam b'kruchen acharei. So we'll say, Rabba Barafuna comes along and says, that when we discuss the idea, so we'll say, if you notice, the pattern in the Mishnah is the following. Any time in which you've established that the woman is genealogically fit, there is no need to prove the genealogical fitness of the children. So once you prove the genealogical fitness of the mother, the genealogical fitness of the children is proven as well. To which the Gemara says that is only true if the children are young and following after. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, V'kulon, Diktoni masnisen inzark lahavi raya ala banim, bekruchen achare nidbakin etzla. We're talking about a situation where the children are clinging to her. So the clinging of the children to this woman is enough circumstantial evidence that she, in fact, is their mother. So the Gemara says, Ten Rabbanon, isha nasasi b'mdina sayam, ibi raya ala isha, inzark lahavi raya ala banim. So similarly, if a man goes overseas and then he comes back and he says, I married this woman overseas, he has to bring a proof as to the genealogical fitness of his wife, but he need not bring a proof as to the genealogical fitness of the children. Or maybe raya ala gidol min tzarech raya lahavi raya laketanim. But when is that true? He's not obligated to bring a proof on young children, but on older children he would be obligated to prove their genealogical fitness, says the Gemara. So I will say again, same logic, because what's the idea over here? The idea is young children, we can ascertain genealogical fitness how? By kruchin acharev. They're following along her. They're following after her. We know that that's enough circumstantial evidence that they're her children. Older children who hopefully are not clinging to their mother. So then you have to prove their genealogical fitness in other ways. Yeah, whatever. However the Gemara is defining young. When is this true? Be'isha achos. This is only with one wife. So the Gemara says, when is this true? So remember, the case over here is where the man went ahead and said, that, let's say, I went ahead and married this woman overseas. So now the Gemara says, when do we say that for young children you don't need a raya? That's only when it's one wife. But let's say he married two women overseas. One of them passed away overseas. So he's coming back now with one wife and children. So even if the children are young, we're going to require him to prove their genealogical fitness. They're kruchen achara, they're clinging to this woman who's with him. It's possible that this woman who's with him is raising these children as her own, but in fact they're the biological children of the woman who passed away. So because of that, he's going to prove their genealogical fitness as well. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is the following. We'll say type of pay. Lo shanu ela b'kad she'agvu. Now we'll say, let's analyze this for just a little bit. So we've established now that, let's say, a man marries a woman overseas. He comes back. And what happens? The halacha is he has to prove her genealogical fitness. But when it comes to her children, we assume that as long as the children are following along after what we call kruchin etzla, they're next to her, they're always with her, or kruchin achareha, that proves the children's genealogical fitness. Comes along Reish Lakish and says, the only thing that kruchin, the only thing that following along the mother proves is by kachi ha'gvul. Kachi ha'gvul means both say that, let's say this man is a kohen, so this will entitle this woman and these children to eat truma and chalo. Aval b'yuchsin, but Rabbi, when it comes to yichus, lo. So this is actually very interesting. So Reish Lakish says that l'maisa, the only thing that kruchin, the only thing that having the children constantly tagging along after this woman establishes, is that if the man is a kohen, this woman and these children will be permitted to go ahead and eat truma and chalo. But for yichus, kruchin is not enough. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Aval yochsin im yesh bohen banos einon nisos lekanim ad sheaviu raya shem benoseh shalzu." But let's say, Rabbi, again, let's say these are daughters. So the fact that they're karuch, the fact that they're constantly following along this woman, does not go ahead and prove their genealogical fitness to marry into the kuna. But rather, again, to marry into the kuna, they're going to require additional proof as to their genealogical fitness. But Rabbi Yochanan says, afilu biyuchsin. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, even with yuchsin, even ultimately, again, for yichus, even for yichus, kruchin is enough. So we'll say fundamental machlokes. So remember, so here's the way the case works. A man comes back from Medina Sayam with a wife, mazel tov. So he has to prove her genealogical fitness. She has young kids in tow. So the Mishnah establishes the principle that as long as those young kids are constantly attached to this woman, that's enough of a proof that she is their mother, and we need no additional genealogical fitness. So once you prove her genealogical fitness, by definition, the children become ksherim as well. So the question is, kosher to what degree? Reish Lakish says it works that if the father is a kohen, they could eat truma and chala, but it doesn't work for yichus. Rabbi Yochanan says even for yichus. V'az Rabbi Yochanan l'tamei. Rabbi Yochanan goes according to his reasoning. D'am Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Am Rabbi Yochanan. So we'll say Rabbi Yochanan who says that this even works for yichus. So the Am Rabbi Yochanan malkin al chazal. Because this is very interesting. You could administer malkus, lashes based on a chazaka, the soklin, the surfin ala chazaka. Similarly, you can execute people based on chazakas as well. You can administer skila and strafa. Remember again, skila is death by stoning, strafa is death by molten lead. You can administer these death penalties through a chazaka as well. This is amazing. They surfin truma ala chazakas, but we do not burn truma on the basis of a chazaka. So what are these cases? Malkin ala chazaka is krav Yehuda. What's the case of where you administer malkus based on a chazaka? The Amar Rav Yehuda huchsika nida b'shchinoseh. So listen to this. Let's say a woman had a chazaka as being a nida amongst her neighbors. So what's the case? What's the case of where a woman could have a chazaka as a nida? If you look at Rashi, huchsika nida b'shchinoseh, she'ra'u shchinoseh shehi hayom haisa melubeshes b'gdi medusa. Both in times of the Gemara. So remember again, today we have it also. A woman is in Nida, specifically during Shiva Nikim, 7 clean days. She wears begadim levanim. A woman is chayavis to wear white undergarments. So in times of the Gemara, women wore different clothing during the days of their nidos, external clothing as well. So it was clear that a woman was in Nida. And I will say now, the truth is that it had to be done that way. See, for us that sounds strange, because generally we're very private about these things. So understand, that's because for us, Hilchos Nida only impacts marital intimacy. It doesn't impact any other area of life. Times of the Beis HaMikdash, when a woman was in Nida, impacted many things. It impacted the produce she was able to touch, who she was able to come in contact with. So it was exceptionally important. So a woman who was in Nida wore different clothing. So let's say a woman's walking around in her Nida clothing, and then what happens? Baila Lokia Leha. And then what happens? We'll say, people hear or people see that her husband has relations with her. So now she's wearing her Nida clothing, but her husband has relations with her. So we'll say all the Nida clothing tells us is what? That there's a chazaka that she's a Nida. Is she a Nida? Is she not a Nida? Maybe she ran out of her other clothing. Whatever it is, the chazaka is that she's a Nida. Now her husband has relations with her. The basin would give him malchus based on that. Even though, again, relations with a Nida carries with the penalty of kares. But remember again, but Beis Din punishes four penalties of karis, therefore Beis Din will give him malchus. Next, soklin v'sarfin ala chazakos. So we'll say, what's the case of where we would go ahead and administer skila or sreifa based on chazaka? Kidraba barafuna. Damraba barafuna. Ish v'isha v'tinok v'tinok. Shigdilo b'soch habayis. So this is an interesting case. Let's say you have a man, a woman, a little boy and a little girl who grew up in a house together. We'll say, what does that mean? In other words, they look like a family. You have a group of people that are living together, and again, they look like a family. And what happens? Niskalin ze al ze, v'nisrafin ze al ze. We'll say, let's say, look at Rashi, niskalin ze al ze, in ba'a ben ala isha niskala ben ala, mishum ba'alimo v'hi alav. We'll say, let's say the boy has relations with the adult woman, or the man has relations with the girl. So we'll say, so the halacha is that an act of incest, the son with a mother, is punishable by skila. An act of incest, the father with a daughter, is punishable by sreifa. So we'll say, so the halacha would be, we would execute these people based on this. We'll say, now what's the idea over here? Do you know in fact that they're a family? Do you know in fact that they're a family? You don't know. Meaning, again, for all you know, there are a bunch of strangers who are simply living together. But the chazaka is that we see them as an intact familial unit, and therefore we treat them accordingly. So if this quote-unquote mother, in quotations, were to have relations with the son, in quotations, that would be an act of incest punishable by skila. Father, in quotations, has relations with the daughter, in quotations, that's an act of incest punishable by sreifa. So from here you see we execute based on chazokas as well. Amar Rav Shimon ben Pasi, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Mishum bar Kafra, Ma'aseh be'isha Shabbos Yishlaim, v'tidach mokrav lak seifa. In fact, Gemara says, there was once a maisa like this. There was a woman who once came to Yerushalayim with a young boy in her arms. Literally means on her shoulders. But it means in her arms. She was carrying a young boy. Vigdilaso. And she raised him. Uba aleha. And ultimately she had relations with him. Ve'vium lebezin v'soklum. And they brought them to Bezin and they stoned them. The idea over here is, Rabbi said, now, do you know with absolute certainty that this woman is this boy's mother? You don't know. What do you know? You have a chazaka. And the chazaka says that if it looks like a family, it's a family. And therefore, again, they were executed based on this. Lo mipnei shebina vadai. The Gemara says, now, we executed these people. Now, again, can you say with absolute certainty that, again, this is her son? No. But ultimately, again, I will say, because it's clear based on chazaka that this is a mother and child, I will say, now you understand, the truth is, Me'ikar Adin, before you execute anyone, Beis Din would always do their due diligence on it. What the Gemara is saying is, you could execute based on a chazaka. In fact, the Rosh and others say that in this case, they did the due diligence, and they were able to find out, but sometimes you can't, sometimes you could do your due diligence, but let's say again, how would you find out that this boy is really the son of this mother? It's hospital records, right? Let's say there are no hospital records. The Gemara says that even without hospital records, if it's clear from the time that we've known this mother, this woman and this boy, she has acted towards him as a mother. He has acted towards her as a mother. And again, it appears they've always acted as a family unit. The chazaka says that you assume they're family. You can execute based on this. I'm sorry?
There has to be
Hasra. Of course, that's the 100s, and
has to be Hasra.
If they were to go ahead and say, we're not related at all, right? It just happens to be she raised me, and we became very close, exceptionally close, over the years. Then Einachinami, right? That's called an Amasla. An Amasla, remember, is an excuse. If they put forward an excuse, then Einachinami, you would be able to spare them execution. Again, we'll say, I want to be clear. The actual implementation of this halacha is much more complicated. What the Gemara is just pointing out is the strength of chazaka. That, again, remember, at the end of the day, what's happening over here is the following. Remember, what we were establishing based on the Mishnah was what? We were establishing based on the Mishnah that als chazaka, you could prove the genealogical fitness of this child. That's the point. That you can go ahead and prove that based on the fact that this child is following after the mother, at the end of the day, they are a family unit. Based on that, the Gemara is just saying, oh, we see this in other cases as well, where people look like a family, the chazaka ultimately is that they are a family. They ain't suffering ala chuma, excuse me, they ain't suffering chuma ala chazakas. Rabbi say, interestingly enough, we don't burn truma based on chazaka. Rabbi said, what's that case? This is really fascinating. So the Gemara said, the Amr Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, sarfen ala chazakas, Rabbi Yochanan Amr ain't sarfes. Rabbi said, listen to this. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rish Lakish says, you could burn truma based on chazaka. And Rabbi Yochanan said, you can't burn truma based on chazaka. Rabbi said, now what's the case? Well, Azla Tamayo, both go according to their reasoning. This is not. Tinok Shinim Tzabet Sad Ha'isa, Rabbi said, it's a fascinating case. You have a little baby who's found by dough. Bitsana Isa, literally on the side of dough. Ubatsek biado. And he's got a little piece of dough in his hand. The Rabbi say, now, that little piece of dough seems to indicate to us what? What? That the baby touched the big dough. We'll call it big dough and little dough. Touched the big dough. Right? So listen to this, Rabbi say. So now, you're going to see how this all plays out. It's amazing. No, really. I missed you guys so much. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Meir mitaher. So Rabbi Meir is mitaher. Rabbi Meir says that the dough is tahar. The dough is tahar. The chachamim mitamin, and the chachamim say that the dough is tameh. The Rabbi say, now watch this. Mipnei shadarko shaltin. So now we're going to analyze the chachamim shita first. Why do the chachamim say the dough is tameh? Mipnei shadarko shaltinok letapeach. Because Rabbi say it is the habit of babies to play in garbage. To play in garbage. So it used to be much simpler than that in your kids and Talmudic times. Put it by a landfill and mamish, they're good for the day. So the Gemara says, so what's the issue over here? Now garbage itself is not tame. The concern is that in the garbage dump, the kid is going to come in contact with shratzim, with all different kinds of dead things. So therefore, again, if you assume that children, poke around in garbage, and in garbage there's always dead stuff, therefore, the child presumably, again, is going to convey some of that tumah, ultimately, again, to the dough as well. So says the Chachamim. So therefore, again, the Chachamim say, now in this case, Rabosai, now under normal circumstances, it could be that I don't necessarily have to be choshish that the kid is going to touch the dough. The difference in this case is what? The child has a little bit of the dough in his hand, which indicates us that he did touch that dough. So therefore, the Chachamim will say, because the assumption is that a child plays around in a garbage dump, and therefore the child's tummy, therefore the child, and now the child has some dough in his hand, you put one and two together, and you assume that the dough is tummy as well. So it sounds like pretty good logic. So the Gemara says, we ask about this. My time did Reb Meir. So I understand now why the Chachamim say the dough is tummy. Why does Reb Meir say that the dough is tahar? Kasavar rov tinokos metapchin, umiot in metapchin. Because Rabbi Meir will say like this, it's true, the majority of children play around in the garbage dump, and therefore touch dead things, and therefore convey tumah. Umiyot, but Rabbi will say, there is a minority of children who what? Who do not play around in the garbage dump. V'isa b'cheskas tarome. This furthermore, again, the dough has a cheskas taro. The dough has a chazaka presumption of ritual purity. Therefore, I will say, watch this. V'samoch mi'uta l'chazaka, Israel rubab. So we'll say, here's what you have according to Reb Meir. You have three things happening over here. You have the rove, the majority of children, play in garbage dumps and touch dead stuff. Therefore, convey tumah. That's the rove. On the other hand, you have the chazaka that says the dough is tahar, plus the miut, the minority of children who do not play in the garbage dump. Says Reb Meir, if you take the miut of children who don't play in the garbage dump, put it together with the chazaka of the dough that is tahar, that is able to offset the rove of children who go ahead and play in the garbage dump. Therefore, when you put that all together, the chum say, I believe we could say that the dough ultimately is going to be tahar. To which the Gemara says, Samiut del chazaka, Israeli ruba. Rabbanon, so we'll say that's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbanon, mi'uta kiman delesadami. So we'll say the Rabbanon say no, because the overwhelming majority of children do play in the garbage dump, that mi'ut of children who don't are like non-existent. Therefore, what you really have is a clash of a rov and a chazaka, right? Rabbanon says you have the rov of children who play in the garbage dump and therefore are tameh, and you have the chazaka of the dough that is tahar. You have rov against chazaka, and whenever rov goes head-to-head with chazaka, ruba adif. The robe is always best. So we'll say, so this is a fun, this is a fascinating machlokes. So again, remember, but I want to be clear, because there's one important point to remember. This case over here is where the child is holding some of the dough. Remember, the case is different, where the kid is just sitting next to the dough, and we have no circumstantial evidence that the child touched the dough at all. In this case, we know the kid touched the dough. So the Rabbanon say again, the dough will be tar. The dough will be tar because, Chacham say the dough will be tameh because at the end of the day, the rov says that the majority of children go ahead and play in the garbage dump. Therefore, again, we assume the dough is tameh. Rabbi Meir will say, well, you have a chazaka of the dough that it's tar, the miut of children who don't go ahead and play in the garbage dump, that'll offset the rov. Says the Gemara, Amri Shlakishim Rabbi Yoshia, Zohi Shesarfin Asat Shuma, Zohi Shesarfin Ala Asat Shuma. So says the Gemara, says Rabbi Shlakishim Rabbi Yoshia, this is the case where we will go ahead and burn Truma based on a chazaka. But say, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, it's like the fourth to last short line in Rashi. Zohi Shesarfin Ala Asat Shuma, Chazaka Shesarfin Ala Asat Shuma, Cheskas Tinokos Shemachzikin Litapeach, Sarfin Aleh Truma. So both say, so the Gemara wants to suggest over here that Reish Lag is saying in Rabbi Yoshia, this would be a case of say where if the dough was Truma, we would go ahead and burn the Truma based on the Rov. The Rov would offset the Chazaka. So Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Ein Zu Chazaka Shesarfin Aleh Asat Truma. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, this is not the case where we burn Truma based on Chazaka. Rather, what's the case? Kidisnan. Another fascinating case. Imagine this. You have dough in the house, and you find like little shrutzim, you find little pieces of living creatures in there. They're like sloughing off their limbs. Now you have to understand. So let's talk about the case. You have the dough in the house. Just follow me on this one. Right? So in the house, I have dough. Now also in the house, there are shrutzim, which are creepy crawly things, and frogs. Now, Bosan, interestingly enough, like a limb of a sheretz conveys tuma, a limb of a frog does not. I find little limbs in the dough. I'm not sure which ones it is. Now, Bosan, now you have to understand something. I will say, just so you see how like lucky we are. So you say to yourself, little limbs in the dough? Like, conversation over. Where are we going with this? I will say, that's because, again, we are privileged to live in a time where if stuff falls in your dough, you just throw it out and get another. We live in a disposable time of incredible... You have to understand, even what we call poverty today is dramatically different than what poverty was in the times of the Gemara. So also, you're talking about a society where if stuff falls into the dough, you figure out what... Right? You figure out how to pick it out. Right? And your question is not if it's edible, because I will get that stuff out to be able to eat the dough. The shaila is a dinner too. I'll say it's an... Sometimes, you know, we become so focused on what we lack that we forget about a little bit of historical perspective about where we're holding in the continuum of mankind and how lucky we are to live in the times which we do. So a person goes out and finds the dough. And he finds in the dough some little, so shratzim utzvardim etapum sham, and you always are finding little pieces of shratzim, little pieces of frogs. Benimtzu chatichos bisa, you find some pieces in the dough. So what says, the shaila is what? Are they sheretz pieces? Are they frog pieces? So what do I do? Imrov shratzim tmea. So we'll say, if the majority of creatures in the house are what? Are shratzim, then the maisa, I assume that the little limbs found in the dough are shratzim, and therefore the dough is tamei. Imrov tzvardim, but if the majority of creatures in the house are frogs, then tahora, then I assume the little pieces in the dough are frog pieces, and therefore again, the maisa, the dough will be tar. So we'll say, satanyak. So we'll say, based, really, this seems actually a pretty straightforward halacha, just totally based on rov, just based on majority. So it says the Gemara, Tanya Kavasi di Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan, there's a brisa that supports the position of Rabbi Yochanan. So I'll say, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Kavasi di Rabbi Yochanan, Do'amar mitamin di Rabbanan litlos. Right? So ultimately, again, what we'll see. So look at the Braisa. Thank you, Rabbi Yochanan. Shnei Divarim Ein Bam Dasi Shas. We'll say a little bit of background on this. The halacha is the following. Under normal circumstances, we make a distinction in Tumah in the following cases. There's Tumah regarding something of Yesh Bo Das Li Shoel, and Tumah regarding something She'in Bo Das Li Shoel. Yesh Bo Das Li Shoel means that the entity in question has the ability to be asked about their status. In other words, Tumah regarding a human being versus Tumah regarding other objects that cannot go ahead and answer regarding their status. The normal halacha is the following. If you have a Safek Tumah Birshus Hayochid, a doubtful case of Tumah in a private domain. So if the object of Tumah is Yeshlo Das Li Shoel, you have the ability to ask it, in other words, a person, then the halacha is that Safik Tumah B'Shus HaYochid is L'chumra. We rule it Tumah. We learn that out from Sota. If, on the other hand, it's Ein Bo Das Li Shoel, then we rule it Tahar. The Gemara now points out over here that there are two things. Shnei Devarim, Ein Bohem Das Li Shoel, they do not have the ability to be asked about their status, and therefore, again, technically speaking, their Safik Tumah B'Shus HaYochid should be Tahar, but Vasom Chachamim Kimashi Yesh Bam Das Li Shoel. But the rabbis made them like an object that does have the ability to be asked, and therefore what? Their Safek Tumah Birshus Hayochid is going to be Tomei. What are the two cases? Number one, Tinok Va'odacheras. One is the case of the baby, and the other is a different case. Tino Kadamra. So we'll say the Tino case is the one we just said before, right? That's what we just said before. That if you find the baby right next to the dough, and what? You have the baby has a little bit of the dough in the hand, then what do the Chachamim say? The dough is tummy, right? Based on the Rov. Next, the Od Acheres Mahi. What's the other case? We'll say another interesting case. Isa Besocha Bayis. You have a dough in the house. Right, v'tana golim umashkim tameim nimtzusham, and you have chickens and impure liquids in the house as well. Right, chickens and impure liquids—they're all together in the house. So I'll say, so what's the halacha? Amud beis nikurim v'isa. And what do I see? I see little pecks in the dough. So I'll say, so you understand what the chashash over is going to be? The chashash over is going to be that the chickens went ahead and put their beaks in the impure liquids, right? And then took some of those impure liquids while they were still wet and pecked at the dough. Now, one thing I know for sure, which is what? The chickens pecked at the dough. How do I know that? I see the peck marks. So watch this. The Gurna Gurma Yisa, top of Pam and Bay's Tolin. So we'll say, so we go ahead and Tolin means we just suspend it, meaning we don't know what to do with it. Lo Oakland. You can't eat it, right? You can't eat it, because we're both saying, again, in this case over here, we're concerned that Lamaisa, again, remember, this case over here is a dough of Truma. So I can't eat it. I can't eat it because it might be Truma to me. It might be impure Truma. So Lo Oakland, below Sarvan, but I can't burn it. Why can't I burn it, Rabbi Osai? Because remember, again, I run the risk of going ahead and burning Truma Tahora. So therefore, Rabbi Osai, what do I do? Essentially, I just let it sit. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Tolin, im isazu shal truma chayshin and shema shasuatana golomashki atmeyim wodashke tobeyam chamusayim. Nikrubi isa. If it's a dove truma, I have to be concerned that maybe what? That maybe lemaisa, the chicken pecked at the dough while it still had the tummy liquid on its beak, therefore conveying tuma to the truma. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, lo shanu elu b'mashkin levanim. We'll say, when do we say tolin? When do we say that we leave the truma kind of in suspended animation? Not being, I can't eat it because it might be tame, but I also can't burn it. Why? Because it may be tar. So when do we say that? That's when it's clear liquid. He calls it white liquid, but you call it clear liquid. Because we'll say, then I really don't know, did the chicken take in the liquids before it pecked on the dough or not? However, aval b'mashkim adumim, im isa dinokir meida yada. Ah, but if the liquid was red, then what? If the chicken did in fact go ahead and put its beak in the liquid and then in the dough, then what? I would know that. It would leave a mark. There'd be a residue. Sigmar says, one second. Maybe the chicken went ahead and what? Put its beak in the red liquid. But then the red liquid got absorbed by the dough. So Rabbi Yochanan said, oh, so Davar Zeh, this matter, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, you're a great man. You heard the halacha, uperusha lo shama. that apparently you left the base medrash a little bit early. Well, so in other words, it's a good muster. Don't leave shir early, because then you leave shir early. You only leave with half of the story. So Rabbi Shimon Levi, there's the rest of the story. Lo shanu ela b'mashkim tzululin shebevua shel tinok nikarba. You're right, both say. Even when it comes to red liquid, if the red liquid is so clear that literally a baby would be able to see its reflection in it. Also, in other words, you could have a colored liquid that has a certain clarity of color that you could see your reflection. You're right. So if it's that kind of red liquid, even if the chicken went ahead and put its beak in it and then pecked at the dough, it's also that type of liquid could be absorbed by the dough. And therefore, even if it's red liquid, you still might say tolin, you still might say you go ahead and you suspend the status of the dough because you don't know if it had the liquids or not. However, mashkim achurim no, but I will say if the red liquid, achurim literally means cloudy. If the red liquid is cloudy, then what? Then indeed, if the chicken had stuck its beak in it and then pecked the dough, you would see the residue of that liquid on the dough itself. So bottom line, halacha l'maisa. So what do we take? So first of all, lesson number one is don't leave dough out. That's the first lesson. Very important lesson. Number two, Rabbosai, the point that we're trying to see over here is the power of chazaka. So for our purposes, meaning what was important for us in this case, Rabbosai, is that familial status is established by chazaka. So for example, if a man comes back from Medina Sayam and says, welcome there, you know, mazel tov, this is my new wife. So we've established, we do have to check out her yichus. We have to establish her yichus. But if she has little children in tow, we need not launch an independent investigation about the children. Why? Because the chazaka says that if the children are in tow, then what? Then by definition, those are her children. The same way Rabbi said, that's what, and by the way, the reason you need to check out her yichus is a situation, let's say, where he's a kohen, right? So again, if a kohen, or really for anyone, you want to make sure that yichus is intact, you have to once, so again, the chazaka that they're into establishes her maternal identity. We see that about the cases of family as well. Says the Mishnah. Rabbi said, now we get into very interesting halachos. Halachos of yichud. Lo yisyachid adam im shtei noshin. A man may not be alone with two women. Well, say that is yichud. Even if a man is alone with two women, that is called yichud. Now we'll see why that is in just a moment. About isha achas misyachidim shkayanashim. But I will say one woman could be alone with two men. One woman could be alone with two men, and that's not yichud. Reb Shimon Omer. Af ish echad misyachim shtei nashim. Reb Shimon says no. One man can be alone with two women as long as what? Bizman she ishto imo. As long as his wife is with him. And as Rabbi say, that Reb Shimon comes along and says that a man can be alone with two women as long as his wife is with him. Why? Because we assume that if his wife is with him, nothing is going to happen. Similarly, the yashen imam bepundiki. Rabbi say they could even all sleep in the same room at an inn as long as his wife is with him. Meshe ishto mishamarto. Because ultimately, again, his wife will make sure that nothing illicit occurs. Misyachid adam im imo beimbito. A man could be alone with his mother and with his daughter. And I will say, now what's the chap of this? As you're going to see, and this is a very important halacha, people sometimes don't realize these halachas. Hilchos yichud means that you are not allowed to be alone with any woman who is an erva to you. In other words, any woman who is prohibited to you, you are not permitted to be alone with her. So the logical application of this says that I can't be alone with my mother, and I can't be alone with my daughter either. They're also erbasid, which the Mishnah says no, and we'll see why this is. A man is allowed to be alone with his mother, and a man is allowed to be alone with his daughter. The yashin imam b'kir basar. Furthermore, I will say the halacha is that a mother with a son or a father with a daughter is permitted to sleep in the same bed even without clothing. However, meaning kir basar means that their flesh is allowed to touch each other. In other words, we're not concerned for anything illicit. Vim higdilu, but I will say, but once the children reach a certain age of maturity, zu yashana b'ksusa, v'zeh yashin b'ksusa. Once the children reach a certain age of maturity, which we'll discuss, then halacha l'maaseh, that's not appropriate for parents and children to sleep unclothed in the same bed. When the children are young, there is no problem. When they get older, everybody must sleep in their clothing. Again, we'll discuss the logic behind this. Says the Gemara. So now, this is interesting because this Gemara is Hilchos Yichud. So my time up. So specifically the Gemara is asking, why can't a man be alone with... So the Halacha of Yichud says that one man is not permitted to be alone with two women, but one woman is allowed to be alone with two men. Why that distinction? Tanit Be'elio, Hoil V'Nashim Daitan Kalos Aleihem. So says the Gemara over here the following. says the Gemara. Now, literally, Nashim Daiton Kalos Aleihem. Now, what does that mean? Now, we'll say we've seen that that statement appears in a couple of different times throughout Shas. What does it mean over here? Look at Rashi. Daiton Kalos Aleihem Ushtehen Nochos Lihis Pasos. Literally, both of them can be seduced. Now, what does that mean? Now, go back for just a moment. I purposely skipped it. Look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah. So Rashi is over here. Im Beis Nashim Mipnei Shadaiton Kala Ushtehen Nochos Lihis Pasos. We'll say, watch this. What Rashi is the following. Now understand, this concept of Nashim Daitos Kalosin is often misused to create an impression that Chazal had a negative impression of women. Chas Shalom, it's not true at all, and it's a terrible, terrible putting down of Chazal to really often just to advance individuals' agendas for a whole variety of things. What Nashim Daitos Kalos means over here in this context is the following. Under normal circumstances, when there's a group, the assumption is people won't sin. Why? Because even if I'm going to sin as an individual, I'm not going to sin in the presence of other people. However, Chazal felt the following, that where there is two women and one man, and one of those women wants to sin, women are capable of being exceptionally convincing. A woman will assume that she will be able to convince the other woman there to participate in sin as well. So because she is confident that she could convince the other woman, and that's what it means over in this context, Nashim Daitos Kalosein, is that women believe that they have the ability to convince another woman, relatively easily. So because if woman A wants to sin, she believes that she can convince woman B to sin, therefore the presence of woman B will not prevent woman A from committing an Aveira. Therefore, halacha l'maisa, again, that's why there's an Isser Yichud, two women with one man. As opposed to, again, in the case of men, the Gemara makes the assumption, Chazal made the assumption, that one man will not commit an Aveira with the woman in the presence of the other man, because he has absolutely no certainty that he could convince the other man to participate in the sin as well. That's the concept over here of Nashim Daitos Kalosin, that ultimately, again, one woman believes that she could convince the other to participate in sin, therefore the presence of the other is not a deterrent to sin. Therefore, again, Isser Yichud will apply, even one man and two women. So, Menachani Mili, where do we know this from? Now, the Gemara is asking, where do we know the concept of Yichud from? Where do we see a scriptural allusion to Yichud? By the way, these halachos are very important, because if you're ever in a business setting and you have meetings and you're meeting alone with a woman, you have to be very careful with the laws of Yichud. Or sometimes even if a person is just in an office setting and let's say the rest of the people leave and you're alone, a person has to ask a shayla about how the laws of Yichud impact these situations. Says the Gemara, where do we see a remez? Where do we see a scriptural allusion to the laws of Yichud? Shene'emar, ki yisitcha achicha ben imecha. Rabbosai, Torah actually over here is speaking about avodah zarah, speaking about idolatry. And the way the Torah phrases it is the following. The Torah says, ki yisitcha achicha ben imecha, o bincha, o bitcha, o eches chekecha. Now, what it's talking about over here is, when the brother, the son of your mother, will entice you to try to sin. So in other words, your maternal brother. So this is a brother through your mother, but you have two different fathers. So if your maternal brother tries to convince you to sin, so the Gemara says, I don't understand, why does the Torah single out my brother from my mother? Why does it single out my maternal brother? V'chi ben aim mesis, ben av eno mesis, what is only going to be my maternal brother, my maternal brother who tries to convince me to worship Avodah Zarah, but my paternal brother will not? Ela lomer l'cha, ben misyache dim imo. So listen to this. So the assumption over, what's the case Torah's trying to frame? Torah's trying to frame, remember, who's the brother who's going to try to entice me to worship Avodah Zarah? It's going to be a brother who lives with me in the house. Now the case that the Torah is describing over here are two brothers, so two brothers who have the same mother, but share different fathers. So the father of the first brother is no longer in the picture. Whatever it is, he died, got divorced. The mother remarried, and she's living in a house with this new man, and she has two sons from two different fathers. So the Gemara says, who's going to be in the house with you? The brother that you have of the same mother, but a different father. But the fact that he's still in the house indicates to us what? That there is no Isser Yichud with one's mother. The Torah is trying to convey to me in a very nuanced fashion that brother is permitted to live in the home. Why? Because there's no Isser Yichud with one's mother. Ela lomer l'cha, Ben misyach edim imo. You see from here that a son is permitted to have yichud with his mother. Va'asur lisyach in kol arayos shebetorah. But ultimately, again, he is not permitted to have yichud with any of the other arayos. The Gemara says, fine. Pashtei dikra b'maiksib. That's an interesting drasha, but what is the pasuk actually talking about? In other words, that's fine. I understand you've darshaned a very nuanced drasha to teach me that a son is permitted to live in the same home as his mother. That's okay. What is the pasuk actually teaching me? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, lomi bai kamar. It's Rabbi say it's a lomi boy. Lomi boy means it doesn't have to say this. A son doesn't have to say this. What does this mean? Lomi boy ben av, the son ilay, va'ayit le'itos ras. So both say, there is a natural tension between paternal brothers. Why is there a natural tension between paternal brothers? One word, inheritance, right? Yerusha. So let's say, remember again, paternal brothers are always angling, and now there's an assumed tension about who's going to get inheritance. So I could understand that my paternal brother would try to give me bad etza. Why? Because he wants me out of the inheritance. He wants me out of the estate. So the Gemara says, Ben av de sonilei va'ayitz le'etzos raos. So the Torah would have told me that if my paternal brother tries to give me advice to worship idolatry, I understand that because there's that inherent tension. He may try to give me bad advice. Ela afilu ben aim. The novelty of the Torah is even my maternal brother. Delosan and Rabosai, there's really no tension between maternal brothers. Why? Why? Because there's no money. Rabosai, it's an amazing thing how things don't change all that much. How the majority of tensions within families generally center around money. So a maternal brother, where there's no real monetary issues, then lemaisa, again, there's no animosity there. I might have thought again that I should listen to him when he tells me something. Kamash malon, that's what? That even if it's the brother from your mother, even if it's your maternal brother who loves you, who always has good advice for you, even if he tries to entice you to worship Avodah Zarah, don't listen. So therefore, our Mishnah says that the Isser of Yichud applies one man with two women. Two women with one man, but two men with one woman, the Isser Yichud does not apply. So say there are Mishnah, does not live for the Vira Abishol. Why not, Rabbi? Say this, Sanya, listen to this. This is amazing halacha. Kol shloshim yom, yotze b'chek. Rabbi said the halacha is that if a baby dies within 30 days, there is no obligation to bury that baby in a casket. But rather, again, one is permitted to take the baby in their arms and bury it like that. For everyone past 30 days, the halacha is you're supposed to place the baby, or you're supposed to place the body into a casket. It doesn't have to be a casket, but it could also be tachrichim, burial shrouds. The idea over here, that a baby less than 30 days, you're not even required for tachrichim. You're not required for burial shrouds. Rather, you could carry the baby out to burial in your arms. V'nikbar b'isha achas u'shnei anoshim. And you can bury the baby, even in a group of just one woman and two men. Aval lo b'ish echad u'shnei anoshim. But, in other words, we'll say there's no obligation to make a big levaya. Even one woman and two men. But, aval lo b'ish echad u'shnei anoshim. But you can't bury that baby if it's just what? One man and two women. Now we'll say, why? Because one man and two women is what? Is yichud. Now we'll say, the assumption the Gemara is making over here, cemeteries, We're often out far away from the city. I want to clear, so this is actually very important as well. The Isser of Yichud, people think it only applies in just like a room. It's not true. Isser of Yichud also applies in situations where it's just two people alone. So for example, if you're driving somewhere, and you're driving in a deserted area, and it's just the man and the woman in the car, and that woman is an erva to you, that creates an Isser Yichud situation as well. So it's any situation where man and woman are alone together. Therefore, I will say, the Braisa says over here, when they're going to be burying this baby, the halacha is that what? That you have to avoid an Isser Yichud. So it can't be one man and two women. Abashol Omer, Af b'ish echad u'shtei nashim. Now, Abishol says, for burying the baby, even one man and two women is acceptable. So we'll say, see from here, that Abishol seems to argue with the definition of Yichud as espoused in our Mishnah. To which the Gemara says, no, Abishol's not arguing. I feel the same Abishol. No. Abishol agrees with our Mishnah. But here, Abishol says, b'shas aninos taver yitzrei. Abishol says, we'll say, what's the whole issue of Yichud? The whole issue of Yichud is that we're concerned that what? That if a man is alone with a woman, or even if a man is alone with two women, something could happen, something illicit could happen. Abishol says, at a time when you're burying the dead, we are not concerned for illicit relations. In other words, at the time, Tabir Yisrael literally means when you're burying the dead, the Yitzhahara is broken. People are broken, they have to bury the dead. Therefore, again, Abba Shaul says, I agree with your definition of Yichud, I just hold that it does not apply by a Levaya. See, even again, one man with two women could bury the baby. But Rabbanan Savi, like Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi says, actually an amazing machlokes. The Rabbanan disagreed with Abba Shaul, the holy Rabbi Yitzchak, the Rabbi Yitzchak, Man yis onin adam chai, gevra chata op, the pasik. And Eichel says, Rabbi said, literally the way we translate it is, Man yis onin adam chai, why should a living person complain? Gavra chata op, have you overcome your sins? Now the way Rabbi Yitzchak tarshins that is, afilu bishas aninus shel adam, even, that's mayis onin adam chai. Even if a living person is in aninos, gavra chatov, yitzro miskabral. What's another word? Rabbi Yitzchak says, a person is always prone to illicit activity. There is no such thing as a time in life where the Yitzhahara takes a day off. Even in the midst of the Levaya, even in the midst of the Kvura, at the end of the day, one still must be concerned for the Yitzhahara. So we'll say, you hear this, you saw this thick machlokes, you understand what's happening over here? The machlokes in Abba Shaul, so Abba Shaul and the Rabbanan say, we agree as to the normative definition of Yichud. Two women, one man is an Isser of Yichud. The Shaila is, does the Yitzhahara take any time off when confronted with tragic situations? Abba Shaul says, yes. They're burying a baby, you don't have, or burying any loved one. Person doesn't have to be concerned that people are going to engage in illicit activity. Because Lamais, again, when confronted with death, you know, death perhaps may be the one thing that prevents the Yitzhahara from acting up. Whereas the Yitzchak, the Rabbanan say, nope, Yitzhahara never takes a day off. And therefore, again, even in burying the dead, one must be choshesh for the normative laws of Yichud. And therefore, again, you can't have one man and two women burying the dead. Abba Shaul says to Rabbanan, to Rabbi Yitzchak, you are misunderstanding the pasuk. The pasuk is referring to someone who complains about the actions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That Havachi Kamar, this is how you read the pasuk. May Yisraim Amidosav. Does a person have a right to complain about what God does? V'chi Gavra Chata'ov. Has man conquered his sins? In other words, what right do we have to complain about the actions of the Ribono Shel Olam? Are we perfect? Have we stopped sinning that we have a right to judge God? Dayo Chaim Shnasati Lo. It's enough that God has given me life, even if I'm not happy with what God has done for me. Right, Gavra Chatov, has man overcome his sins that he has the right to stand in judgment of God? So the Gemara says, "Rabbanan ki ahu ma'isa dahi isisa dahava uvda vafikse." The Rabbanan will say, "Listen, Abba Shaul, here's what we can tell you. This happened. A woman pretended that her baby was dead, and she took the baby out to be buried, and she went with other people, and they committed an illicit act. In other words, they used the death of the baby, who wasn't even dead, as a pretext to get out of the city in order to engage in illicit behavior." So they said, "I'm not going to say that, Abishal, listen, you could quote whatever you want. We're telling you what happens, right? This is human behavior. Now again, you want to say it's not the norm. Okay, we're not saying it happens every single day. But Lamaisa, at the end of the day, it's enough to tell us that the Yitzhahara is strong. And even again, in the midst of death and dealing with tragic circumstances, Lamaisa, again, people still go and do all kinds of stuff. Let's just go a little bit weiter. Aval Isha Achos, some of you don't have Loshan al Bukchenim. So most remember we said, one woman with two men is not Yichud. It's not a problem of Yichud. That's an okay situation. So Mark qualifies that. Rabbi Yitzchak and Rav, that's only true if the men are ksherim, if the men are individuals of proper moral character. Aval beprutzim, but both say if the men are prutzim, if the men are immoral individuals, afilu beasarna, then even if it's 10 men, both say, in other words, the assumption is that lamaisa, if people are ksherim, so two kosher men, we assume, will not commit any illicit act with a woman. But lamaisa, if they're prutzim, if they're immoral individuals, you can have a group of 10 men, and we still assume something is going to happen. After all, havin maisa, votziu basar mitra, both say there was a case like this, this is wild. There was a case where a group of men and a woman wanted to engage in an illicit act. How did they do this? They pretended like she was dead, and they took her out of the city, and they committed their 10 men. They committed their immoral act with her. So you see, if you hear both say, when people are immoral, nothing stands in their way. You see, it's all the time that sometimes 10 people conspire to steal a very heavy beam, which none of them could carry on their own. They carry it with each other, and they're not embarrassed in front of each other. The point the Gemara is making over here is that numbers by themselves do not assume a safety net against illicit behavior. Numbers only work when the people involved themselves are kosher individuals. But if they're immoral individuals, then again, no number could guarantee against safety. So Gemara says, we'll bring a proof to this. Most from Lo Shnei Talmidei Chacham Shemiyah B'Labaderech. So let's remember again, we learn this in Sota. That when the husband is taking his wife up to Yerushalayim to give her the waters of the Sota, so the Beis Din would give them two Talmidei Chachamim to accompany them on the way, to ensure that the husband would not have relations with his wife on the way. To which the Gemara says, Talmidei Chachamim in Sheba Amalo. What do you see from here? It's only Talmidei Chachamim who ultimately prevent some type of illicit relationship. In other words, that it's only because these individuals are Ksherim that we assume that they will stand in the way of illicit behavior. If they were not Ksherim, then what? Then simply because they're two would not prevent illicit behavior. To which the Gemara says, no, you can't bring a proof from here. Why lo? Shani Talmidei Chachamim. The role of the Talmidei Chachamim in that case is not to prevent yichud. The role of the Chacham in that case, however, is to be able to go ahead and properly warn the husband. That if the husband is going to have relations with his wife, these Talmidei Chacham warn him, just know that if you do this, then what? Then what? Then Lamaisa, the waters will not work. But ultimately, again, this has nothing to do with Yichud, but rather everything to do ultimately, again, with proper Hasra. So we'll stop over here for today. So just understand, we're ending off now in the middle of the Sugya. So here's what we've established. As much as the Mishnah went ahead and said, two men and one woman is Yichud, is not Yichud, excuse me, the Gemara is qualifying that by saying that's only true if the men are Ksherim. If the men are not Ksherim, if the men are not individuals of proper moral character, then it's quite possible that two men, three men, 10 men with one woman will still be a problem of Yichud. We'll qualify this more tomorrow, Mirz Hashem.